This week on Writers, Inc.
You know, you've heard of plotters. You've heard of pantsers. A plantser does both. So I do not write to a very strict outline, but I am not a true discovery writer either. I need some structure.
J.K. Rowling was nearly homeless when she wrote the first Harry Potter book. Stephen King penned Carrie in a small desk wedged between a washer and dryer. James Patterson worked in advertising and famously crafted the Toys R Us theme song long before becoming an author. Join New York Times bestseller J.D. Barker and a panel of industry powerhouses as they pull back the curtain on some of the world's most prolific authors. Where did they start? What is their process? The biggest names in publishing all have origin stories, all have tips and secrets. What does it take to consistently top the bestseller lists and become a household name? Get your notepad out. School's in session. This is Writers, Inc.
Hi, it's Christine Daigle.
I'm Jenna Brown.
I'm virtually Kevin Tomlinson.
And I'm J.D. Barker. Welcome to Writers, Inc. So we've got a coyote problem here at the house. Do you guys have coyotes where you are?
Yes.
Yeah, I live in Texas. Yes. They're bringing people across the border all the time.
I was telling Jenna about a coyote issue last week, wasn't it, that I'm not going to talk about on air because it was sad. And I was very sad.
We get coyotes all the time, just running up and down the street, just hanging out, having a great time.
Well, we fenced in our yard, and like a big portion of our yards is woods, and it turns out there is a coyote that lives in those woods, and now he is trapped on the inside of our fence. We think he can get out. We think he's, you know, like the fence is only 5 feet. He can probably jump right over it.
Yeah.
But the problem is he keeps having these clashes with our dog. And we've got a standard poodle, which you wouldn't think of as being aggressive, but like he's, you know, he's 60 pounds. Like this is a big dog. And poodles were originally bred to chase lions, which is something I learned about them later. But like when you have two, you know, dominant, you know, alpha type dogs in the same space, you know, they're basically competing. So whenever our poodle goes back to the woods area, this coyote chases him out. And when the coyote comes near the house, the dog chases the coyote back, but they're getting closer and closer. And like, I know sooner or later, this is going to end in some kind of confrontation. So I texted our local police chief. I was like, what, is there anything I can do about it? He's like, well, here, call this guy. He's with fishing game. So I called him and he's like, well, I can come out and shoot it. And like, and I don't want to shoot a coyote. Like it was here first, you know? So like, I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
So I've talked to a couple other people and finally somebody sent me a list of like guys locally that will trap it. And then they'll take it to a reserve somewhere up in the mountains, which I guess is the you know, wild animal equivalent of going to the farm. But this grizzly guy came out. I called him up. He came out. He looks like he lives in the woods. And like he looked at the snow. He's like, oh yeah, you've got animals. You've got squirrels. You've got this. You've got that. And it's like he's looking at tracks. He's like, coyote's off over here. It's about 60 pounds. It's, you know, it's like he figured all this stuff out and he set up a trap. And he put a beaver tail in it, which is supposed to attract him. It is not attracting him. So like the trap has been empty for like 5 days. We've seen the coyote roaming around in the yard. It walks right by the trap. Has no interest in the trap.
It's smart.
So put some chicken in there.
So here's a fun fact. Beaver tails are what we call the equivalent of elephant ears in Canada, just like fried dough with stuff on it. So
you call them beaver tails?
They call them beaver tails. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm pretty sure that's not what he used.
No, I don't think it was fried dough with powdered sugar.
No, this smelled pretty funky.
Here in Texas, we have Buc-ee's. And if you ask for a beaver tail in Buc-ee's, you get something entirely different.
Do I want to know?
Oh, it's delicious.
Which is all that matters.
That's all that matters.
So the moral of the story is if anybody would like a pet coyote, you're welcome to come up to New England and take this one.
Wow.
Okay.
Pass. Okay.
Challenge accepted.
Yeah.
Kevin, what is in the news?
In the news. So appeals court rules that artists can reclaim foreign rights. The United States Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit ruled that U.S. copyright termination rights apply worldwide, allowing artists to reclaim not just U.S. rights, but foreign rights they previously sold. The case was brought to Cyril Vedder, who sold all rights to his song Double Shot of My Baby's Love in 1963 for $1. The court found that Congress did not intend termination rights to be geographically limited. The decision cites broader copyright precedent, including Tom Clancy, related cases revealing Congress's goal of correcting artists' unequal bargaining power. Because the ruling conflicts with other circuit courts, it may face further litigation and has a strong chance of U.S. Supreme Court review, potentially reshaping copyright reversion rights across creative industries.
I love how the U.S. is just telling every other country our copyright law is law.
Yeah, like,
whatever you come up with, that's cute, but it doesn't matter. You have to go buy our stuff.
Does this affect any of you? Like,
probably. I don't know.
Foreign rights back? Probably. You
know? It could potentially. I mean, I have books in foreign markets, so maybe, but I haven't had any dust ups or conflicts, so.
I don't think I've, I'm trying to think, like, I've got a bunch of foreign publishers, but I don't think I've ever had to actually change one, like move one book from one publisher to another. They've all kind of just kept the books alive, and I just renew the contracts whenever they come up. So I haven't run into a problem with this, but I imagine if you actually do, like, it's got to be a complete nightmare to try and resolve it, you know, dealing with legal entities in another country is that would be horrible.
Yeah.
U.S. law is law. Moving forward, we don't have to worry
about it. That's the way it Perfect. Should be. Speaking as an American, I prefer that. All right. Independent Publishers Caucus launches bestseller list with ABA. The Independent Publishers Caucus has launched the Independent Press Top 40, a new weekly bestseller list in partnership with the American Booksellers Association, spotlighting titles from independent publishers sold at independent bookstores. The list features separate top 40 fiction and nonfiction rankings using ABA bookseller sales rankings, not book scan unit sales, to surface books that often miss traditional bestseller lists dominated by big five releases. Titles are drawn exclusively from indie publishers ranging from larger independents like Grove Atlantic, that was a slip of the tongue, to small presses with lists published weekly as PDFs and Excel files and linked to bookshop.org. Organizers say the list aims to boost discovery, especially for new bookstores and librarians, and to provide an alternative data signal that better reflects how independent books actually sell across indie retail.
I feel like we need to get a bookstore owner on the show again to talk about how this is actually being tracked.
Yeah.
Because like years ago, the New York Times list, like the way it worked, and I'm sure it's completely different now, but like they would basically send every bookstore a list of like, these are the books we think are going to be on the list this week. And they had the ability to write in, I think, five more or disagree with something that was on there. You know, and some people returned that, not everybody did. And, you know, like, but it just, it was very clunky. And this kind of has that same feel to it. Like they're taking a step back. Like I don't know how reliable it's going to be.
Yeah, it's interesting though. I think it must be a way to fight against some of those bigger retailers like Amazon for independent bookstores that aren't making their money off of those, you know, huge sellers, and they're trying to hand sell and with people direct selling. I think this has to be a fight against some of the changes that are happening in publishing. I don't know.
Well, BookScan's never been 100% accurate, you know, because I can see the numbers through Simon & Schuster now. And like, I know, like I see every order that comes in, I know where the books are going, and like, it doesn't line up. And you know, like a lot of stuff like Amazon and things like that, or if they're being reported at all, they're underreported. So that's not accurate either. But it's the 21st century, it's 2026. Like they should be able to get together, create some kind of system that just works across the board. Like how hard can it be to track all this stuff?
Yeah, it's really weird because I was having a conversation with someone not in publishing the other day, and they were asking, you know, about like book sales. And I was like, oh, it's actually really hard to get like accurate sales data. Like they actively work to make it complicated and difficult, which is kind of interesting, especially when you have like bestseller lists, because the assumption I think for people outside the industry is like, oh, if there's a bestseller list, then this is easy to see, right? There's a ranking, you should be able to find it. And it actually is in fact not, which is just kind of weird to think about.
This honestly makes me question Casey Kasem. Yeah, because he was tracking the top 40 songs back in the 80s before tech. So how was he able to do that? Like I'm beginning to wonder whether his lists were even accurate.
There you go.
No list is accurate.
Your list is 100% accurate if you're the one making it.
That's true. Yes.
That's I never heard anything about how Casey Kasem actually got his figures. It never even occurred to me. Wasn't it a Billboard thing? Is it Billboard top 40 thing?
Yeah, but if Billboard's like New York Times bestseller list, then who knows? This is going to be a fun rabbit hole later.
It was supposed to be based on record sales, but then again, how do you track that? So
right.
Well, it was the same thing, right? So he was using the Billboard list. You know, he probably had that in front of him, and that's what he was going by. But how is Billboard actually compiling that? Because it's a similar system to do BookScan, you know, which they're using today for books. But this is back in the 80s, you know, so who knows? Well, none of it is right.
All I know is that I am consistently number one on the charts when it comes to the Kevin Tomlinson list.
Well, I know Jenna and I are tracking our pull-ups, and right now we're both at zero on our New Year.
No, we are at 0.5. Thank you. Come on.
Top in our 40. Pull-up challenge.
Jeez.
I put my pull-up bar right here in this room. I'm looking at it.
I need to get that little that pull-up bar thing that JD sent everybody. I need to get that and start using that.
But yeah.
Yeah. We
I feel
already
like I shouldn't do that until we're in another home. You know, there's no point doing that here since we're going to be leaving. So.
Yeah. I don't know if you can put that on a van. I'm not sure.
Probably.
Parks all have those pull-up you know, like the exercise station.
Yeah, but that's outside where people can see me.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Last story. Matthew McConaughey trademarks himself to fight AI misuse. Actor and frankly author Matthew McConaughey is trying out an untested legal method to protect himself against unauthorized AI clones, trademarking himself. He has 8 applications approved by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, including himself staring at the camera and saying, all right. I gotta tell you, this ain't gonna hold up. There's no chance in hell that he is going to be able to trademark himself.
Didn't JD bring this up like a month ago? Like there's a country that's like having people do that to their copyright their faces or something. Didn't we already talk about?
But we just established that U.S. law is the real law when it comes to copyright.
Wow. Okay.
So. See, now I think this will work. I've got a feeling he's going to set some kind of precedence. It's going to at least maybe work its way up the courts. To get to the point where somebody's going to decide. One caveat, though, like I don't think he actually owns the rights to those 3 words. All right.
That's the movie script, right? Yeah.
It's a movie script, and he was paid to say that line. So somebody else probably could claim that line.
Well, they can use the line. They just can't use his face
with
the line, right? So if you can track your face and your voice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is gonna
put every impersonator comedian out of business if he actually pulls this off.
So where I was gonna go with this is, let's say that I just happen to look exactly like Matthew McConaughey and my voice sounds like him, or you know, whatever. Are you seriously gonna tell me I can't go out and, you know, I have a career, I can't go out and do, you know, say I can't say all right somewhere? You know, there's no way to do this. There's no way to enforce this as a trademark.
I would think, you know, he's probably trying to go broad so he can get something narrow. That's usually the way it works with legal.
Well, that's exactly what's probably happening. Yeah. I mean, but I don't see it. Well, maybe. Maybe his voice, maybe something like, I don't know, man. It is so hard to do this because it fails almost every test when it comes to intellectual property and what you can have rights to. So, well, we'll see.
I saw a video yesterday on TikTok of Elvis commenting on the stuff happening in Minneapolis.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that is what Matthew McConaughey is trying to fight. You know, he's trying to prohibit somebody from being able to create that. And like, if you remember, like, you know, if you scroll TikTok at all, when Sora or whatever that's called, when it first came out, you know, there were videos of Michael Jackson, you know, like all these people, you know, like Michael Jackson stealing Amazon boxes, you know, like literally anything that they could come up with.
Right.
So they have to put some kind of lid on this.
Yeah. Okay. So if you are, you can block this kind of thing from happening if someone's trying to use your image to sell something. But if I don't know if he's taking aim at the people who are doing, you know, having him endorse a product or whatever. That's problematic, and I think he's got a case there. But if he's just going after people who are like, Matthew McConaughey says this about Minnesota, it won't pass. There's just no way to, because if they're not making any money off of it, there's no damages. If there's no damages, then there's no case. That's my take as a completely amateur. I am not a lawyer, and I don't.
If I use Matthew McConaughey's likeness in social media to promote this podcast, am I going to get sued?
See, I think, and there's wiggle room in that, actually.
There you go.
It just depends, because some of it can fall under parody law.
I hope that you're not allowed to do that. I mean, an impersonator making jokes is one thing, but like trying to get a celebrity to endorse something.
Yeah.
have like even a political opinion or like I there's it's just it's that's I don't know. I think that that is going too far.
What if you heard a voice that sounded exactly like Matthew McConaughey endorsing a product on the radio? It doesn't claim to be him. It doesn't s use any of his catchphrases. There's nothing overtly to indicate that it should be him. It just sounds like him. What
So I can
happens?
tell you, and this is silly, but like in Florida, there
And I
was.
have a I'm calling this up, by the way, because I have an example of this.
I do too. So when I was in Florida, there was a car dealership that used to use like Eddie Murphy's voice and like all types of celebrity voices, and they did that exact same thing. They never actually said the name of the person, but these were all iconic voices that you knew. He got sued, and he actually won. Just simply because he wasn't actually saying, like that this is this person, this is that person. So this is all a very fine line, but like that, with AI right now though, like he's in uncharted territory. The AI is in uncharted territory. All this stuff is going to have to work up the court. And until it does, there is no, distinction one way or the other.
I think in your Eddie Murphy example, they were probably aping some of his bit, right? So it was identifiable as this is supposed to be Eddie Murphy. But
That's the
the
thing, but if they
yeah.
don't say it, like they don't own the bit. Eddie
Yeah.
Murphy doesn't own his laugh,
Right.
and I suppose he probably could.
And
I think James Earl Jones at some point tried to trademark his voice, and I don't know if that
yeah.
ever final,
There used
but
to be a thing though called truth in advertising. And like, fine, use the
what?
thing, but there should be like
1920?
fine print somewhere that says like this is not actually Eddie Murphy. Like it
Only
just
if they're
it
making the
feels
claim that it is,
dirty.
though.
It
Right.
feels tricky. And like, fine, maybe they can get away with it and maybe it skirts the weird line, but it feels like you know what you're doing and it I don't know. I just think it's really like unethical, immoral.
I won't argue against that. I just know what has happened and what's been legally allowed and what hasn't. And Morgan Freeman, there was a whole thing with a company I was involved with. We used an imitator to do his voice and read lines. We didn't claim it was Morgan Freeman. We just wanted that sound. And there was a lawsuit and we won because we never claimed it was Morgan Freeman. We never used any of his
And
lines.
it wasn't
Let me
Morgan
ask you a
Freeman.
question though. Like I'm this is me putting my old, legal compliance hat on. If I were to subpoena all your emails and your internal communication, was Morgan Freeman mentioned at any point?
Yeah, you're gonna have to. So, okay, there is a little bit there because we did say that. We wanted someone who sounded like Morgan Freeman. And because we used the word like, we
Then you're
got off
okay.
scot-free. Yeah. So
Wow.
I'm just saying. I just have seen
Yeah.
this happen. It may
Legal
change.
arguments are one thing. Should it be allowed? Like,
But also, is it let me jump the fence here. Because when the AI is doing this, it's not somebody doing a really good imitation of Matthew
Well,
McConaughey.
yeah, it's
It's
actually
his voice,
stealing. Yeah, they're
right?
stealing
So
it.
maybe that's the
The
loophole that they'll
difference.
exploit. Yeah,
We
we'll see. I don't know.
can all hope so. We can
I don't
hope. We
know.
can hope.
I'm gonna
Yeah.
be honest with you. I don't think that this should be. I don't think he should be able to trademark himself. But that's me.
We'll
I'm
find out
a.
what the court says. All right.
I'm
All
sending
right.
Matthew Kevin's address.
You should.
Perfect.
He doesn't live far away, so he'll come
Nope.
over and thump me real
You'll see
good.
him and his Airstream are going to be in your driveway tomorrow.
That's
Perfect.
right. That's right. You know that manuscript you've been editing for the past year? One that's almost done, but never quite gets there? Well, right now, it's crying out for help from this episode's sponsor, AutoCrit. Quite possibly the most powerful all-in-one writing platform, AutoCrit puts an entire publishing team in the palm of your hand. Get access to customizable automated alpha and beta readers, plus series-wide story analysis, marketing support, line editing tools that can help you catch the mistakes you miss, and even more, including exclusive craft events only for members. The value is insane. And right now, you can grab lifetime access for just one payment. No monthly fees, no usage limits, no caps, no tokens. At AutoCrit, unlimited means unlimited. It's time to finish your book, start making real progress, escape revision limbo, and publish with confidence story after story. Check out autocrit.com/JD to save 50% on lifetime membership right now. That's autocrit.com/JD.
JD, who's up this week?
This week we've got Becca Brinkmeyer coming on. She's a USA Today best-selling author and ghostwriter of more than 90 novels. She works with AutoCrit as an instructor and author coach. She loves helping writers untangle their ideas, build confidence, and turn rough drafts into finished books. When she's not coaching or writing, she speaks at conferences and on podcasts about writing with ADHD, strategy, full-time author life, and book marketing. Here she is, Becca Brinkmeyer.
Well, if you have listened to the Writers Inc. podcast for any length of time, you have heard of AutoCrit. And you probably hear my dulcet tones talking about AutoCrit in the ad, the sponsored ad that comes each week. But I have here an AutoCrit, I don't know what to refer to you, AutoCrit specialist, genius, somebody in the know, Becca Brinkmeyer. How are you?
I'm doing so well today. Thank you so much for having me on.
We were talking just before and you said that it's a nice sunny day in the Pacific Northwest, which is that unusual? That's pretty unusual, right?
Yes, I mean, it's the time of year where the grayness happens, the rain happens. I personally love gray and rainy, but I'm not going to say no to a mild sunny day.
Well, you know what's, what are two good activities? We're just going to say what the best activity to do on a rainy, overcast day, though, is to write something.
Absolutely.
And you guys can help with that. So let's start. Just for the one or two people, possibly can't possibly be more than two people who don't know what AutoCrit is at this point, why don't you give us a little rundown of what AutoCrit actually is, what you guys do?
Yeah, I would love to. So AutoCrit is a kind of a, it's more than a platform or almost like an ecosystem, if you'll forgive me for using that particular like buzzy word. But we are a place where you can plan, you can write, you can edit, you can analyze, you can get marketing feedback, you can join community, all of this based on your writing. So we are just kind of a one-stop place for authors where you can manage all of these different sides and needs for your writing projects. And then in addition to that, we offer things like our AutoCrit Academy, which offers lots of instruction. So if you're looking for craft, if you're looking for business, if you're looking for marketing instruction or webinars or different courses or workshops, we have that as well.
Okay. So a lot to help you. Now, what level of writer would you recommend for this? Like beginner, intermediate, professional?
We have members of every single level here in our AutoCrit community. I have folks that have been working on their book for the last 20 years and we're perfecting, we're getting there. We have folks that are really just, they're living that dream, that first book, you know, the first time you type the end. It is such a huge accomplishment. And we have folks that are seven-figure authors that are turning out lots of books. They are hitting lists. They're having a great time. They are establishing their career. And then quite a few people somewhere in between. So fiction, nonfiction, we welcome writers wherever they are in the process.
You cover the entire spectrum in your ecosystem. That's good. You know, I've played around a little bit with some of AutoCrit's features. I have to admit, I'm not a loyalist to that degree yet. They're working on me. Jocelyn's working on me.
Excellent.
So what would you say though? I mean, to a dabbler such as myself, I mean, what's the one thing you think would recommend this highest to somebody who's, you know, I've written for, you know, decades now, a lot of books out. What would entice someone like me to come on over?
Ooh, well, I think I would probably ask, you know, first what your goals are. Okay. So if you're a dabbler and let's say, do you write in series?
I have, yes.
So we just have a new feature that came out for our series analyzer. So one of the things that I would recommend is that perhaps you bring in one of your series and you can do the story level analysis using our Story Analyzer Plus for each of those books. But then you can do a series analysis of the entire series. And you can then use our build your own alpha reader features and build your own beta reader features. And you can do those for both individual books in your series, as well as your entire series so that you can get feedback. You can kind of figure out if there's been a sell-through issue or a read-through issue. You can do some of that tracking, and then you can run market fuel over the entire series and get some additional marketing ideas, get some demographic ideas, get some positioning ideas. I mean, I'm definitely advocating that everyone should be selling more books. So,
I think selling more books sounds like a good plan in theory,
yeah,
on
that's,
paper.
yeah.
I like that. I don't often think of you guys in terms of the marketing, but what are some of the things that you do on that front? Like, what is it that you what's the help there? Is it just like helping you figure out like I should be marketing to this demographic or using the this verbiage on my book description? Is it something like that?
A little bit, yeah. I'm a huge proponent of because I write romance, I write fiction predominantly. I really lean hard into things like trope-centered marketing. And so one of the things that we get from our analyzer feature as well as our market fuel feature is getting a really thorough understanding of what the heck we just wrote. I think that that is a struggle for a lot of our authors is that they can write a brilliant story. But at the end, when you say, okay, what did you write? How are we going to sell this? You get kind of that blank look. And I'm not judging. It's just that they're like, I don't know, I wrote brilliance. Like, go buy it. This is like, it's a beautiful story. Why is it not in your hands? Instead, we can break down what themes are present, what genre positioning should this fit into, what subcategories, and what are some of the comparable titles so that you can kind of figure out where this fits in the market. And we do a lot of that by it reads your entire manuscript and tells, pulls out where that is. Additionally, we pull out marketing hooks, which I think are really interesting because I know I've paid people to do that to read my work and say, find wherever I was particularly snarky and pull that out, please, because it needs to go on TikTok.
Yeah, I could
So,
see that.
yeah, so it pulls out some hooks that you can then take and throw on a video or throw on a post or something like that.
Very interesting. And
Yeah.
it's doing this. How's it doing all this? What's the magic behind all this?
So we have a proprietary system, and so it is a closed system. So for folks that are concerned that their work might be used as a training for AI or anything like that, we do not permit any training on our users' work. There's no third-party apps that are allowed access. In fact, no one is allowed access to your work except you. So yeah, we have a proprietary backend of different pulling from different technology and models and things like that to help figure this out.
That's what I was getting in. Yeah,
Yeah.
I was kind of fishing for that because it is AI, but
Yes.
people get scared or angry. There's all kinds of reactions to just the phrase now. But you guys, like you said, it's a closed system. Nobody is looking at it, right? So,
Nobody is looking at it.
handy.
I can't look at your work. I, without a written consent specific coming in to support saying, hey, Becca, I messed up my headings and I cannot fix it. Can you please go into my document and help me fix this? In which case, we have that one-time exception to go and fix whatever it is you asked for.
Oh, very
And then we
cool.
exit. So it is, we were built by writers for writers. I have my work. I have my ghostwriting work in AutoCrit as well. And I take, we all take everyone's security very seriously.
Well, what is sort of the history of the company? Like, where'd this start?
This, oh gosh, AutoCrit has been around for, I think we're on year 13
Wow.
now. So,
That
yeah.
long. I didn't realize you'd been around that long.
Yes. It's kind of evolved as technology has evolved, but we started with, a lot of line editing reports that we still have. We still have 30 plus different line editing reports and just kind of ways to get through the slog of self-editing. Like, you need to know all of us have different quirks about our writing, and so it was just a way to help built by a writer for writers to help us get better.
Now, would you say that this replaces an editor, or would you use this along with an editor? Like, how would it work?
Everyone has their own process with that. For me personally, I've been publishing for 15 years. I've got 90 plus titles out. I still use a human copy editor. And I still use a human proofreader. But what I find is because we don't change your text, we instead give you the analysis, we give you the data, but we allow you to keep your own voice. For a lot of people, this is a way to get developmental level feedback and to be able to kind of strengthen their writing so that you can move forward, perhaps with less editing needed later. So it's really going to depend on your, writing skill level, your knowledge of your genre, and what it is that you need. But I will say that I still have a human copy editor. She's been with me forever. Please never leave me.
I know.
Yeah.
Finding a good editor is kind of like finding a good hairstylist or a good
Yeah.
mechanic. Like you actually you worry about telling anyone about them,
Yes.
which they want the business. Hey, send some folks my way, but you're like, no, I don't want you getting busy with someone else's stuff, and then you don't have time for mine.
Exactly.
So yeah, years ago I wrote an article promoting this idea that I called an edit stack, which was to take as many different ways to edit your book as possible and stack them together and let it filter through that as if going through some sort of filtering process. So I think autocrit would fit very nicely into a plan like that. So just saying
I
that as an
agree. Yeah.
aside.
No, I just think that I want you to edit your work. To
Yeah.
everyone who's listening to this, please edit your work in some capacity. I know a lot of people have, I've had a lot of conversations at events that I go to, and they're like, well, I write really clean, so I don't need to edit. I don't care who you are, everyone needs editing at
Yeah.
some point on
Yeah.
your work
Yeah.
because we have author blindness, right? Like, I know what's supposed to, it's supposed to say, so my brain might fill that in when it might not actually be there.
No, I did a quick edit on something today that I had written that I have edited myself several times. I ran it through some things and glanced at it today and saw I was missing a word right in the smack in the middle of it. And I swear it had that word 10 minutes ago. So it happens.
Been there.
So, your role at Autocrit, why don't you talk a bit about what you do there? Like what are you primarily there for?
So I write, well, I wear a lot of hats over here at Autocrit. So officially, I work a lot with our partnerships, and our projects, but I'm also one of our author coaches and instructors. So you will see me on, we're representing Autocrit at a lot of writing events. You
Okay.
will see me on podcasts. You'll see me on different channels, but you'll also see me teaching a lot. So I do a lot of our teaching in our academy, where we have some master classes and things like that. And then I work with, kind of just a little bit of everything, really.
Yeah.
But it's been so much fun.
Yeah, and you so I it was funny 'cause JD struggled with this when reading your bio originally. But he said that it reads that you are the leading you lead team Planser in the
Yes.
Novel 90 Writing Challenge, which is difficult for me to say. But let's talk about I want to talk about that word specifically for a second. Planser. What do you mean by
Oh, we're a
that?
little bit of structure, a little bit of chaos over here on Team Planter. So we smushed two words together to use the official, verbiage here.
Right.
You've heard of plotters. You've
Yep.
heard of pantsers.
Yep.
A plantser does both. So I do not write to a very strict outline, but I am not a true discovery writer either. I need some structure. And so a lot of folks we found do have that combined writing style where it might, you need a little structure, but a lot of creative freedom to kind of figure out where you're going. And so this writing style, it fits very nicely with my brain, and I am able to be quite productive when I have that. So we have our Novel 90 Writing Challenge that happens. It's actually happening February 1st, where we help you plan, write, and edit a novel in 90 days. And you can join different teams based on your writing style. And each of those teams is coached by a best-selling author who writes in that style. So you get that interaction. It is all free, but you get that interaction to be able to kind of figure out best practice and how you can apply this writing style to actually getting words on the page. Because I think a lot of times people are like, I'm joining a challenge, but then nothing ever happens because they don't write. And we're here to gently give you that accountability, but also FaceTime to say, no, you should be writing actually. And here's how we can be successful doing this.
That's it's fun. How I mean, let's dive into that a little. The novel 90 writing challenge, he said, struggling once again. What's the actual, what are the sort of parameters of that whole thing? How's it work?
Yeah, so we have we started this in 2024. So it started in the fall of 24. We've had, let's see, Novel 90 24, we had Summer Novel 90 25 and Fall 25. So this is our fourth iteration of this. And it's basically, instead of doing a 30-day challenge where you're just trying to get like purge your brain, get everything out on the page. At the end of the page, you're looking at this like, I don't know, I have 50,000 words, but I'm not sure how many of them are usable. We wanted to put a little more intention and make this longer and make it more interactive. So we created, that's where the 90 came from for the 90 days. All of us, our coaches all write pretty quickly. We're all pretty prolific, so we have our system down, and we wanted to be able to share information about not only how can you actually get a book done in 90 days, but how can you then prepare yourself for your author branding for launching said book. We don't just want you to write it, we want you to edit it and then publish it, so that it's out there. So that's kind of what sets us a little bit apart. And again, it's 100% free to join in. We would love it if you wanted to.
Yeah, that is very cool. First of all, I always appreciated NaNoWriMo when it was around. Rest in peace. But I also, I got the concept, and in fact, I kind of credit Chris Beatty and NaNoWriMo with the sort of push I needed to, get into a writing career. I didn't participate in Nano, but I did take that 30-day, concept and started writing regularly back in the day. But the pieces that were missing to me were what you just mentioned was great. I've got a book. Now what? And just all the advice you ever got was, well, edit it, and then do something with it. So it's good that you guys will hold people's hands through that.
It's one of it's a we try to be really supportive. We've had folks that have come in that they were able to finish their first book, and that book is now for sale. I have someone who finished their book is now being represented and is under submission. I have people that wrote me a beautiful email I got last week that said, "Do you know how many years I have been trying to finish this dang book? And it's finally done because Novel 90 held, gently was like, you're gonna get it done. It's gonna happen this year." And they did it. They completed their editing. They sent it off to be formatted. They are ready to go. And they did that in that 90-day challenge. So we've had tens of thousands of authors now come through this challenge on our, and we're looking forward to welcoming even more in 2026. It's been so cool to be part of.
Have you guys had any major success stories come out of that?
We actually have filmed a couple, so watch our YouTube channel, and we will be sharing those out in the next few weeks, actually.
Okay.
So
All
I'm
right. All right.
excited.
Wait. Oh, all right. What's the YouTube channel? Where are they going to find you?
It is Autocrit editing.
Autocrit editing on YouTube. Okay. Yeah, I'll look forward to seeing that. I'm always interested in that sort of thing. Because I don't think I've ever, I'm sure there are some, but I don't think I ever heard anybody say, yeah, this mega bestseller, they wrote this book during NaNoWriMo. Like, I don't think I've ever heard anyone say that.
I used to do NaNoWriMo almost every year just because it became part of the kind of writing calendar, right? It just becomes a, oh yeah, I'm going to bust out this book in November every year. It was usually for one of my passion project pen names where I may not put a whole lot of ad money behind it, but I get to write something fun and I get to write in community. And there was a gap that, disappeared. Just there's a gap without Nano, and we have hopefully become part of someone, everyone's writing calendar as we continue to offer these events. So we do offer it 3 times a year as well. It's not just November. So we have spring starting in February, then summer starting in June, and then fall starting in October.
It's good. I like it because it's I am a big fan of things that push and serve the community itself, right? And that's what you're doing, because you're not just it's not just write the book. It's we're going to guide you through all the things that happen after the book. So I like that. I want to loop back on something, by the way, because this is something that I'm always interested in, because I'm a dedicated pantser. I've been, there are those who have tried to convert me, and I did convert Brandon briefly and do some plotting and that sort of thing. It didn't take. But I'm curious about the Plantser idea. Would you mind talking to us a little about like what that means for you, what, you know, what's involved in that process?
Yeah, I mean, I can speak to what I do personally. So I, when I get an idea and I'm starting to plan out, you know, I'm actually in the process of planning out a new series right now. So what I already have a general idea of what I want my series to cover. So it's not going to be a linear series. It's going to be a selection of standalones in an interconnected world. So I have, you know, I have a document where I've jotted down what I think my main world anchors will be. I write contemporary, so there's, okay, you know, I don't have to build a magic system or anything.
Right.
And then I'm going to look, because I am very trope heavy in what I write, I'm going to list out the tropes that I know that I want in each of these books that I'm planning. And I use the universal fantasy method from Theodore Taylor, and love it. So I will list out some of the universal fantasy type things for each of those.
Okay.
And then I have an idea of how I want it to start usually. And I have some scene ideas and maybe an idea of how it's going to end. And so I'll put that into a bulleted list for like acts 1, 2, 3. And then often that's enough for me to get going, where I have a little bit of direction. Some folks like to build out character sheets. Some folks like to do a little bit more structure, because that's not a lot of structure.
Right, right. Yeah.
And there's a lot of flexibility there. I have some folks that really do like to do what is, I guess, would say a traditional outline that just doesn't have the individual beats all worked out yet. So it's just kind of a higher level outline,
yeah,
and then they have flexibility, so that's great. You can do that and still be a Plantser. And then I have other friends that are like, I don't know, this is a vibe, and that is the extent of my planning. I'm gonna go just discover how this vibe is going to apply to my work.
Oh, I like that idea. Vibe,
yeah,
writing.
Yes.
That's very cool.
I'm just like, go you, as whatever gets you to get words on the page.
Yeah, I love that as a concept. And I think that would probably mesh better for me. And I've kind of done that recently. I've, you know, tinkered a little bit about it, but I get overwhelmed by the plotting concept. How do you keep yourself from going overboard and doing too much? Like, where's the line, and how do you find it? That's what I'm curious about.
Ooh, that's a good question. I'm not sure that I've fully fleshed that out for myself yet, because I routinely go rogue.
Yeah.
Usually it ends up for the best. Every now and then I'll have to cut like 15,000 words, because I'm like, what did I do? What happened here? Put that in. I actually am a big fan of never delete. I always move to a slush pile and then use that stuff for like newsletter magnets and things
that. That's a good idea. Yeah.
Yeah. Bonus blooper scenes, bonus scenes. What the heck was Becca thinking scenes? I try to reuse everything that I cut when I have to do major changes. But for me, I always ask myself, because I have a good idea of who my ideal reader is. I have a good idea who my target audience is. So I'm always thinking about reader experience when I'm writing. I do write to market. That is my goal. But I want to be an interesting take on whatever it is. Like, if I know my readers love enemies to lovers. They love spicy small town things. But I don't just want it to be formulaic. I want it to have a little bit of, you know, the Becca signature in there.
Yeah.
So I give myself a lot of room to play, because when I play, that's when I get into that flow state. If someone just gives me an outline that has, you know, 20,000 words, write this,
right,
I find my muse gets really cranky.
Right. I totally get that. I actually honestly have trouble with the reason I have trouble with the whole outlining process is because it deflates the momentum for me. Like, my enthusiasm gets blunted because now I know how the story ends. So I guess what I should do then is try outlining, but don't outline the ending.
I think some people do that. You know, one of the things you can do in the story builder too is you can come in with just the basic couple sentences about your premise and world, and then the story builder can help you brainstorm what those beats are. Shout out to Team Planner, because, you know, everyone's got their beat sheets beautifully filled out, and I'm just looking at it like,
I know,
I don't have a beat sheet.
I'm so jealous
of that.
Nor will
I ever
actually
have one.
I know. There's a part, but I'm equal parts jealous of that and terrified of it.
Right?
So I totally get why you do that, but just the idea of it makes me want to start popping Pepsi. You know, like I don't think I could survive it.
You can get it from the story analyzer though. Once you've, written something, you can run our story analyzer and then it'll populate the beat sheet for you at the end
Oh.
so that you could then use it as part of your developmental editing process. You can be
Oh.
like,
Well,
what
that's
did I
very
do
cool.
there?
So you would just pop into that and sort of maybe you could just throw your idea in there and it'll actually kind of create the beats for you.
It will, yeah. And
Excellent.
it'll give you, you can have alpha level feedback on your idea, and you can have marketing feedback to decide, because I like to write things that no one asked for every now and then, and because it feeds my creative brain. Sometimes you have to write the weird thing that's probably not going to sell. But I do like using market fuel on my ideas to determine if the weird thing fits into my schedule or if I should go back to writing the thing that's like actually selling. And so it gives me some good feedback there.
Yeah, you mentioned right to market, and I always like to clarify with people what they mean when they say. I know what it means for me, and I know what it's traditionally meant for the industry, but when you talk about writing to market, what do you mean?
So I write for my ideal reader. I write for my brand. I have kind of dialed in on what it is that I want to deliver, and then I consistently deliver that. So if it's, heartwarming stories, I like to play with redemption arcs a lot. I'll be honest, I write, and all of my pen names are pretty spicy, but I have, a certain level of spice factor, and I have a certain level of I guess emotional availability for some of my characters. So, and then there's always going to be, even in my darker stuff, there's always going to be some of that. Like, I have a very weird sense of humor. So, there's going to be a little bit of weirdness that goes in there. But I try to write to less of what's trending. I'm not a huge trend jumper. I do write fast. So, I have done it from time to time where I'm like, ooh, I bet I could write that and I can get a book out pretty quickly. But instead, I try to really understand my tropes and themes and kind of build something that's a little bit evergreen. So if, romanticism is so hot, it continues to be hot, it will probably, continue on that. If I were to write a romanticism story and I wanted to include the chosen one trope, and I wanted to include dragons or something like that, then for me, I could market it to fitting into that niche. But because it's also me and I like to play with stuff, I might reverse that trope a little bit and make it the reluctant chosen one. Instead of the person who's rescued, it's the barista who's like, get out of my face, I'm not fighting your war. What do you mean you brought a sword? I don't do swords. So, like
Very
that kind of
cool.
thing.
So let's loop back real quick to Autocrit, and what is sort of on the board coming up for Autocrit? Is there anything you can share?
We just launched the series analyzer. We have some more stuff that I'm actually not allowed to talk about that's coming out in February. And so watch this space, I guess.
Okay, all right.
We also have I like to highlight things that I think people don't use enough that we've already built into the system. One of those things is we have smart dictation inside of our writer's desk. I don't know. Do you write with dictation?
I've tried it. I'm not that much of a fan, but I
Okay.
get
It's been one of those
it.
things after carpal tunnel surgery, I was like, I need a different way.
No, I don't, I like the idea of it and I've had some success with it. It's so awkward to me, but if I had to, yeah, I could do it. So
See,
what do you
meanwhile,
guys?
I took my dog for a walk this morning and wrote 1,800 words. I think my neighbors think I've lost my mind
I
completely.
do a lot of that kind of stuff during dog walks. All
Yeah.
my dictation experience came during dog walks. I do a daily short for YouTube on my dog walks. So my
That's
neighbors are
awesome.
fine with, me being the crazy guy talking to him. So, okay. So before we wrap up, we do want to loop everybody back to the Novel 90 Writing Challenge. Where can they
Yes.
find out more about that and participate?
Yeah, you can sign up at www.novel90.com. So 90 spelled out in numerals.
Okay, novel90.com. All right. Well, that's going to wrap us up. I'm really glad you came by to chat with us. Autocrit, of course, has been a sponsor of the show, and we appreciate it. So, thank you guys for all you do.
And thank you so much for having me on. This was so much fun.
So I want to jump into this one because we had a little stumble over this word a couple times, both in our private communications, and I think maybe even when you were announcing her last week, JD, but she talked about being a plantser.
Yeah, and if you notice, I removed that sentence from my description.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw that.
I didn't want to create more work for Alex.
I get where she's going with that. I was pretty interested in that as a topic, actually, because I've played that role a little in my own work. But have you ever mixed plot? Do you mix plotting and pantsing? I know you've gone full plotter.
I mean, even when I was a pantser, I think I was still sort of plotting because I always came up with something, you know, at the beginning, something that was going to happen in the middle, and something that would happen at the end. Like I always had an ending in mind, even if it changed. So, you know, it wasn't a full on outline or anything, but there was some kind of plotting going on, just not very detailed.
Yeah, I think, like, I don't know, good plotting always has room for a little bit of pantsing. Like you're sort of like, you know, you're doing the beats and like the scenes, but like there's still wiggle room in there. Like you still get struck with inspiration. You still have the unexpected happen. You still have, you know, all these other things take place. So I think like that's kind of like, I don't know, a weird misunderstanding of plotting, that it's like, you know, like it's a framework or like a blueprint for a house where it's like you have to follow it to a T. And that's my experience hasn't, and everyone I've talked to that plots, that's never really been the experience.
Yeah, agree with that. Like even when I do very detailed outlines, the book never ends up following it the way that I've conceived it. Things change as you write it. So I don't think I've ever done a book where I haven't thrown it out like at least part of an outline.
Yeah. Even people who do like really, like you said, detailed outlines, I guess like some of the pantsing comes in during that outline process because you are sort of exploring and feeling it out and deciding what works and what doesn't. So even if you technically stick to your outline, there is still a lot of, you know, what happens next? And like, oh, I didn't expect that to happen, or oh, that idea came out of nowhere. So I don't know. I just feel like sometimes plotting gets a bad rap.
Yeah. Well, you and I were talking about, Jennifer, our next book using Truby's Anatomy of Story, which I did. I spent 2 months and went through the book, did an extremely detailed outline. I'm now about 20K into it. It is vaguely ish what I outlined over those 2 months, but it's just like when you get there and you actually start doing it, it sometimes it just doesn't work sometimes.
Yeah.
You have to adjust, right? So
I think like plotting is good for, like JD said, knowing what you're writing to the end, you know, writing to the end, and then also helping you identify sort of like the themes and heart of your story. And I think if you have those two things in mind, like whatever process you apply is like just extra.
The whole plotting process was so painful for me for some reason. And I think it's because I overthink all this stuff. And I could probably, if I could do a more skeletal outline, I discovered something called a simple spine method that I think is interesting. And I'm still exploring it, or I don't feel confident enough to talk about it yet. But, I may play around with that because it's sort of a, it's not like plot points and or beats. It's more like, you know, this series of things that should happen thematically in the story.
Is that from a book? Because I read a really good book about it, and I've read so many crap books now, I get them mixed up, and I feel like it was either Take Off Your Pants by Libby Bray or Write Your Story from the Middle. It was maybe one of those.
Well, probably one of those. Yeah.
Yeah. And it talks about stories.
Maybe Libby's book, because I did read that. So several years ago,
I
don't remember
it.
Where it came from, but
made a lot of sense to me. So
Well, as I learned, you know, I'll probably talk about it on my other show, but you know, as I figure it out, I'll give it a try. I'm not done with plotting yet, but I am sort of done with plotting. Like it is.
Well, let me ask you a question before we move on, because then when you're done, it was interesting that she said then you struggle to understand what you write.
Yeah.
What did it was like? What did I just write? Does that happen to you?
Like when I'm doing
When you're
long
done,
form
like,
without
what are
the.
the themes? What's the genre positioning?
Oh,
All of
yeah.
this kind of thing.
No, the thing is, like, I really want to do the whole, like, here's the themes and here's everything. But when it's all done, I don't think I actually pay attention to any of it. I think I once I actually start the actual writing, the instinct kicks in, and I don't really. I'll refer back to a plot just because I'm trying to keep it aligned, at least a token alignment. But no, it's almost like doing this. It kills to me. The whole plotting thing kind of kills the story for me. So that's what I've always struggled with. So I don't know. I'm a bad example of all this. That's what it is. We talked a little. We talked about the whole the Novel 90 thing, which is coming up for them. It's a writing challenge if you don't remember from the interview from moments ago. What's your take on like structured challenges like this? Is this do you think it actually helps writers to do a challenge like this? Like, was NaNoWriMo useful
Yeah.
to the writing community?
I think so. I mean, I think that it even if you don't do it, I think just thinking about what it would take to write a novel on a schedule is the thing that like helps you like learn your writing style and, maybe look at what does work for you and what doesn't work for you. So I think like even if you try to do a challenge and you fail miserably at it, if you take that extra step of trying to understand like why it didn't work for you, like, oh, well, because like the pressure or whatever, and then you can adjust to find something that does work for you, then I think it's a success. I think that you actually did succeed in the challenge because I don't think that the outcome should ever be the focus of any goal where you're striving to get better at something. I think that the focus should always be on the process. And so if you learn something about the process and how to improve the process for you, then I think that you're learning and you're growing and you will be on the path to success.
Yeah, I think especially when you're starting out, like accountability and community are very helpful to finishing, right? Just finishing
Well,
something.
I think before NaNoWriMo, a lot of people, like you think you're a writer, you feel like you're a writer, but like NaNoWriMo actually forced you to be a writer. So for 1 month, you've got to put your butt in that chair. You've got to make, what was it, 1600 words every day or something. And that's a huge ask for somebody who's never done it before. You may get to the end of that month and realize this is not what you want to do, or you may get to the end of the month and realize this is exactly what I want to do. So I think it was good for putting people at task.
You learn a lot about yourself. I mean, I think that like writing, yes, we're writing stories and made up characters, but I think at the end of the day, you are learning a lot about yourself. This is what works for me. I need to write in the morning or I need to write in the evening, or maybe I'm sort of like an in the mood writer, or like I need to sit for 30 minutes and just whatever it is, like I guess it's like there's no wrong way to write a book. You just have to write it. And I think all these things just help with that.
Anything that kind of nudges you to at least go for it. When I, anytime I've talked to people who say like, I've always wanted to write, I can't see writing, something that long, or I'm, I really do very sincerely think that if they could just get going, the momentum of that would carry them through most of the time. I mean, there is going to be a point where it just gets really hard. We all, I don't know if you guys deal with this. I know I deal with like muddy middle and things like that, and it just kind of can derail me sometimes. But
Well, let me ask you a question though. Like, when you hit that point, you still put your butt in the chair that day, right? And you try.
every day. Yeah.
Yeah, see, that's the difference, I think, because I run into a lot of people that, like they'll hit that spot where they're stuck. I don't know what comes next in the story. And then they take like 3 weeks off or 4 weeks off. Like, they
Yeah,
just wait
that'll
for
kill you.
inspiration to strike. Yeah, because like for me, like that inspiration never comes when I'm doing that. I'll end up, a week on a Friday or something and think I'm totally stuck. I don't know where I'm going. And then I sit back down Monday morning and that first sentence comes out and I'm off to the races again. But if you don't put your butt in that chair, on a regular basis, it's tough. That's how those books turn into a 10-year project.
So one of the things that Autocrat does that I think is a useful tool is that it can pull out marketing hooks and can help you understand the themes and the and how to position your work in a market. So, what do you guys find is most useful for identifying the, your book's strongest marketing angles?
Well, I think I'm going to use autocorrect because anything that will pull it out for me and I can use on social media is a bonus. So that's it.
I've been using Claude for some of this stuff, and because you can now you can dump the whole novel in there as a project, and even like themes. You know, like you were just talking about themes. Like if you ask Claude what is the theme of this novel, you may find that what Claude comes up with is different from what you as the author thought it was when you were writing that book. But that basically means Claude is most likely right, and that's the you need to double down on the theme or whatever he picks out of it, versus your own thoughts. So any software like this, I think, is huge because like we develop these, it's almost like a tunnel vision when we look at our own books. This is what the book should be about. This is how it should be marketed. This is everybody's favorite character, but these are all thoughts in our own head, and it may not resonate with the rest of the world. It may not reflect what everybody else thinks. So autocrit, any of these things that will, pull this stuff out, from a neutral standpoint is huge.
I think that one advantage I have coming from the Bookstagram world is that I look at things through the lens of like, what would a book box look like? So like if I had to put together a book box like for something I'm writing, I guess I try to think about like what are the things that like I really liked about it, and then like, oh, what product would that fit? And I don't know why, but that really kind of helps me think about like, oh, what would hook someone? Because I think if you could make a product out of it, like it is kind of like a hook that you could use for marketing, even if that product like doesn't exist or couldn't come out. It's like it gives you that idea, I think.
You know what JD was saying about the feeding it into Claude and having it kind of pick some things out, and it identifies things like I'm handwriting something, and I've been taking photos and dropping it into ChatGPT just to type it up, and it just sort of randomly started telling me, yeah, you're exploring this theme, and you've really dove into that idea and that theme. I'm like, I had none of that in mind when I wrote it, but that sounds great. I'm going to use all that. So, yeah, it's a very useful, powerful tool.
All right. With that, JD, who's up next week?
Next week, we've got Samantha Sato-Yarbo coming on. Samantha's a professional daydreamer, aspiring time travel, and speculative fiction writer based in Manila. She's going to tell us all about her latest novel. It's called The Elsewhere Express, and it releases January 20th.
Sounds great. If you'd like to be notified as soon as new episodes publish, make sure you go to writersincpodcast.com and sign up now. We'll see you next episode, and have a great week of writing.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Writers Inc. Access the show notes and leave a comment at writersincpodcast.com.